The chair calls the Education Policy Committee to order for Tuesday, February 25th, 2025. We'll have our committee LA note the roll. Is a quorum present?
Yes.
A quorum is present. And we'll get the approval of the minutes out of the way here. So, Representative Gordon, have you had a chance to review the minutes for Thursday, February 19th, 2025? And if so, would you move approval of the minutes?
I will move approval of the minutes.
All right. Thank you, Representative Gordon. Representative Gordon moves approval of the minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails, and minutes for Wednesday, February 19th, 2025 are approved officially. All right. And before we start officially with our bills, we have a new committee legislative assistant, and I'd like to have her introduce herself, and then you just flick that on.
Hi there, I'm Kate Miller. I'm the new CLA temporary until Isaac comes back in a couple months. I'm happy to be here. So let me know if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. She's doing a great job, and happy to have you with us. So bills may be taken in any order. So members, today we're going to be discussing the issue of student attendance, chronic absenteeism, and truancy. Last biennium, the legislature established a legislative study group on this issue, and that study group produced the bills posted for today's agenda. Our plan today will be for Representative Keeler and Representative Bakeberg to co-present the issue and discuss the bills. We will also have some public testimony and member discussion. So Representative Keeler and Representative Bakeberg, I also believe you have one presenter with you, Matt Shaver, with a presentation. I will recognize either of you to begin, or we can begin with Mr. Shaver if you like, and then turn to both of you to discuss your work and your bills. So would you prefer to start one of you two, Representative Keeler?
Thank you, Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about attendance today and having a robust conversation. I hope that this is a conversation that both sides can really engage in. Attendance is something that over time we've known is an issue, and we all agree that it's important for our kids to be in school, one for the social component of it, but also for the learning component of it. And so just laying the landscape that this is going to be a decade's worth of work, if not more, because there's massive areas that we need to dive into. The other thing I want to be very clear about is that this has been a bipartisan effort from the very beginning. I can let Representative Bakeberg jump in on how we got to the task force or the study group, but just wanted to make sure that as we move forward today and moving forward when it comes to attendance and truancy, that we make sure we keep the spirit alive of being bipartisan and doing what is right for our students in Minnesota.
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just maybe to give the committee, a number of you are new to education policy or to the legislature, and just kind of give some background about how we got to this point. And I would just echo what Representative Keeler talked about, that this is a starting point for ongoing conversations. And you'll see that we have eight different buckets that we came, that we developed through a multitude of meetings, testimony from stakeholders. But it all started in education policy. And Representative Keeler brought a bill, and she started out by saying, this is not the solution. This is the starting point of a conversation. And we had had some conversations previously where we would be sitting across the aisle and be like, wait a minute, I think we agree on this issue. Which, you know, frankly, in today's polarizing times, that doesn't always happen. And education is a place where we can find a lot of agreement. So she presented that bill. We had the formal conversation in committee that can be kind of clunky. And then we met and we talked through. And she actually took a bill that I had in the previous, in the 23 year, and she deleted her entire bill and took my idea. And we joked back and forth that she stole my idea, but it was collaboration. And that was just to establish a study group, because this whole idea is not going to be fixed. The chronic absenteeism issue that Mr. Shaver is going to just kind of give you a lay of the land a little bit. He educated both of us a lot. That's why he's here. But we're not going to fix this today. We're not going to fix it this biennium. There are significant reasons why kids don't come to school. And many of them are outside of the control of the legislature, to be very blunt. But I think this highlights what can happen when we kind of pull back the layer of partisanship and we talk about issues where we can agree. So, you know, Representative Keeler and I have been in multiple spaces where, you know, we see the world very differently. We've said that on a whole host of topics, but this one we can find consensus on. So what you're going to see, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Shaver here, but I just wanted to set the landscape for what had happened, but also what can happen when we move forward together. And that would really be my challenge to anyone, you know, frankly, to anyone, is, you know, put this down and have a conversation, because you can find a lot of agreement on topics. And then at the end of the day, from an education standpoint, kids are impacted by the decisions we make here every single day. So when we make the decisions, when we have these conversations about chronic absenteeism and truancy, remember that these are real kids, real lives being impacted. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Shaver from MedAllies.
Mr. Shaver, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Chair Bennett, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Shaver. I'm the Senior Policy Director at Allies. We're education advocates for kids. Thank you so much for the opportunity to have a couple of minutes of committee time today to talk about chronic absenteeism. I'm indebted to the leadership that I've seen from Representative Keeler and Representative Bakeberg on this issue. Getting kids into school, we found, as we've done advocacy on this, is something that all folks throughout the state can come to some agreement on, because it's not an issue that is in specific pockets throughout the state. As you look at the cheat sheets that are right in front of you, every single community throughout the state is dealing with getting kids into school. And so I want to just talk a little bit about the scope of the challenge. This is the data that we brought to the legislature last spring. This is the data that Chair Pryor, Lead Cresha and Lead Bennett at the time, Chair Joachim, listened to and saw, and Representative Bakeberg and Representative Keeler saw as, hey, we got a real problem here. 30% of students in the school year 21-22 were chronically absent. And we'll talk a little bit about what we mean when we say chronically absent in just a moment. But I think oftentimes when we talk about education statistics, we can really get lost in the sauce of big numbers and percentages, okay? That 30% of students represents 236,101 kids. And just to help you with the visual of that, those 236,101 kids would fill every single seat in U.S. Bank Stadium, over at the University of Minnesota's football stadium, Target Field, Target Center, Allianz Field, Mariucci, the Barn. We got the Ordway, we've got Orchestra Hall, and we got the Guthrie. Okay, I want to just take a second to hold on that, because I think it's way too easy to dismiss a statistic like 30% of kids aren't consistently attending school. I want you to picture a child in every single one of those seats, born with limitless potential, deserving of the world from us as adults, not attending school on a regular basis. This was the most recent data that we had when we started this journey together about a year ago here at the legislature. This was important because in 2019, these were not our chronic absenteeism rates in the state of Minnesota. Our chronic absenteeism rate doubled from 2019 to what we have in front of you here. Went through the legislative process, number of investments got made, number of bipartisan initiatives moved forward. And this fall, heading into August, we got some fresh data, and we saw some progress. This fall, the Department of Education reported that 25.5% of Minnesota students the following year were chronically absent, and that represents 199,185 students. I want to show you what that progress looks like. Better is better for kids who were chronically absent the year before, who were the following year. That's important. Getting kids into school, there's more learning time, more ability to be taught how to read, do math, build relationships with their friends and their peers, have access to meals, have access to mental health supports, all of those things. That's real progress. We're nowhere near where we need to be when we have this many kids throughout the state not regularly attending school. And so what this data doesn't tell you, and one of the challenges of chronic absenteeism data, I can't tell you how many of the students that would be represented here are in elementary school or middle school or high school. I can't tell you how many of the students that would be represented here were chronically absent the year before. I can't tell you how many of the students who are represented here were chronically absent because of excused absences, unexcused absences, or suspensions. I can't tell you how many of the students were just over the line that they missed 11% of the school year or 40% of the school year. We could know that. We are a state that every single day for 900,000 kids, we count. Are you here or are you not? That information is reported through the district. If you've ever been a teacher, you've taken attendance, and if you've ever had a kid spill their juice right when you're supposed to take the attendance and you forget, you get a call from the office that says, we need your attendance. We do this daily. But one of the things you might be noticing is, hey, you know, this data is kind of old, right? We have a real problem with the lag between the real-time attendance that happens every single day for 900,000 kids and what we're able to know as a state and what you're able to know as decision makers. So you can make targeted investments so we can learn what's working and what's not and what's moving the needle for kids. Whatever you think the purpose of public school is in the state, it can't be that if we're not getting kids into the door. And that's why this is so important. That's why I think we found a lot of bipartisan support in both the House and the Senate as we worked on it. So these lost learning days add up. I'm going to throw some other big numbers at you. Okay? So students who were chronically absent missed at least 3.1 million combined days of school. And on your cheat sheets, you're going to see some districts in your local community. This is a conservative estimate. Like I said, all chronic absenteeism tells you is that they've missed at least 10% of the school year. They missed at least 16 and a half days. That works out to at least 15.9 million hours of instructional time. That's definitely an undercount, and that's only for chronically absent students. So students who were consistently attending still missed some time. That doesn't include those hours of lost learning. This is an issue all throughout the state. There are 60 districts throughout the state where over half of all students were not regularly attending school. There are 240 schools with 50% or higher chronic absenteeism rates. Statewide, 36% of students living in poverty were chronically absent. And these represent small improvements from the previous year. A couple of notes that I think are worth mentioning about consistent attendance and chronic absenteeism. Those are two measures of the same thing. So consistent attendance means you're attending 90% or more of school days. Chronically absent means you're attending less than 90%. So that measurement is the combination of days missed to excused, unexcused, or suspensions. Okay, it combines all of them together. Students are considered in attendance, this is the guidance anyway, if they're on field trips, at sporting events, or other extracurricular activities. The threshold is if a student is with an adult paid for by the district, they are considered in attendance for the day. And only students who are enrolled at least half of the school year within their district are counted for this indicator. Okay, so there's some students that aren't counted because they've moved, they've changed schools, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot that we can know, but there's still more questions that we don't. For folks watching, legislators who are interested, like where do you pull up all this data? Just go to our report card, rc.education.mn.gov. Go to North Star Consistent Attendance. You can get your statewide, you can type in your district, you can type in individual schools. You can do a lot of comparison. You can look at consistent attendance rates for your entire district. You can break it down demographically. You can do some comparisons by year. It doesn't go very far back, but it's a pretty helpful metric to give a sense of like how consistently your students are attending near you. Okay, a couple more pieces. This is just some of the same data broken down demographically and over the previous few years. So just the thing to point out, again, the reason we're here is because our chronic absenteeism rates doubled. Okay? We don't have statewide data right now for the 23-24 school year, the one that ended last spring, and we don't have attendance data right now statewide for the school year that we're in right now. And we're actually an outlier as a state for not having more recent data. Most other states, and I'll give you an example of one in just a moment here, have much closer to real-time data, if not real-time data available, so we can track and see how our schools are doing and getting kids to school. Okay? It's just another way of looking at it. This is all right from the Department of Education. They presented at the Student Attendance and Truancy Legislative Study Group, just looking demographically by specific student populations. Always on the hunt for bright spots. Anybody knows folks out in Marshall? I'm always super interested. They show up on both of these lists where 90% of all of their students are consistently attending and 85% of their low-income students are consistently attending. But there are a number of districts throughout the state where we are seeing some exemplars and some folks to learn from. Super important to recognize where that good work is happening and see what we can learn and scale. The other thing I think is really important, and just to orient you to this chart, is because chronic absenteeism compiles a bunch of different reasons for kids that are missing time, it's important to figure out, okay, how many kids just missed the mark, right, or just on the other side of that 90% attendance rate, so that we can figure out how to triage and tier our supports, right? I don't think we should be as worried about kids who are attending 88% of the year. And the reason that they got under that threshold is because they got norovirus for 3 days. And that was the first time in their 12 years in school that they were chronically absent, right? I'm much more concerned about, and I think the legislature should be much more concerned about, kids who are chronically absent year after year, kids who are chronically absent due to mostly unexcused absences, kids who are missing in that green, blue, maroon, I don't know what to call that top color there, kids who are missing more than half of the year, because they're going to need different supports than kids who are just over the threshold. And the good news here is that for the 200,000 kids who are chronically absent in the most recent year that we have data, 70% of them attended school 80 to 90% of the time. They're gettable, right? That's habits of attendance. That's, you know, a couple extra nudges potentially from the school district. It's those other bars there that we got to start getting at the root causes for why kids aren't regularly attending school. And a lot of the work and the bills that are proposed today, they're going to help schools, districts, counties, and the state have a better response to kids who are showing struggles with attendance. There's much, much more work to do. And just, again, to be frank, to follow in the footsteps of Representative Bakeberg and Representative Keeler, preventing attendance issues in the first place, that's going to require an attendance agenda that goes far beyond just what can be done in a K-12 committee. That goes to your peers that are sitting in transportation committees right now, health and human services, housing, taxes, et cetera, right? What we're doing right now is what we can do in the K-12 space is how to have a better response, more coordination, making sure that the response isn't done in silos, okay? All right, I'm going to wrap up here quick. Some data questions that are worth thinking about. We need to get timelier data. It is unacceptable that we have a two-year data lag from the department to the state. We could disaggregate chronic absenteeism by excused, unexcused, and suspension. Again, the point is we want to cut through the noise to better understand who actually needs those additional supports. Not knowing chronically absent students by elementary, middle, and high school is very, very important. A six-year-old who's missing 25, 30 days of school is going to be missing that amount of time for very different reasons than a 16-year-old who's missing that amount of time. And actually how to fix that and solve that are going to require different things. But if we don't know that, it's going to be hard to solve for. And then again, severity of absenteeism, right? How many days have kids missed? Have they missed it multiple years in a row? Those are all real indicators for additional needs and supports. I want to point to Rhode Island. Their governor has really, really decided to prioritize this, really, really sees that getting kids into school is foundational to anything else that you want to do for kids in school. So every week puts out a press release with the highest attendance rates for elementary, middle, and high school and the highest growth from the week before. I'm not going to say that a press release is all that we need to do in order to get kids on track. It's a symptom, though, of systems that are responsive and talking to each other. And I'll show you what we can get done in Rhode Island. They have real-time attendance data dashboards. And it's not because they're smarter than us. It's not because they have a smaller state than us. It's because they have decided to prioritize this. And so remember how I told you I'm not going to be able to tell you the attendance rate for Minnesota for another couple of years? I can tell you by school in Rhode Island, by elementary school, the day of the week that has the highest and lowest attendance rate for any school in the state. You can click it in the little corner there. It's very, very important. I can tell you how many students right now are already chronically absent in the state of Rhode Island. They're doing real-time attendance tracking because they're making their systems talk to each other. So there aren't silos, so there can be better responses, and it's working. You can look year over year in Rhode Island right now and see that at this same point, this many school days in the school year, fewer days have been missed in Rhode Island than the year before. It's pretty fascinating when you make this a priority, what can be done. The last thing I'll say is that we had some conversations this summer, Representative Bakeberg and Representative Keeler, and they said, yo, Matt, like, can you go find out what legislation they passed in Rhode Island to make this? And the answer to the story was that there wasn't any. It became a priority, and they did it. And we can do that here, too. We can make it happen. That's my last slide. I'll stop talking now. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Always happy to chat more. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. You're welcome to stay up there for now. We're going to now turn to our bill authors to talk about. This is going to be a little different than normal. We won't go bill by bill here. We're going to allow them to discuss, and then at the end we'll do some technical things to move these bills. So who would like to start? All right, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair and members. I think we're going to just take a quick minute to go over the recommendations that we landed at when we had our study group, just to kind of lay the groundwork of where the bills came from. Representative Bakeberg and I will just do this together quickly. We've done it in a couple other areas, so I think we can do this rather quick. So what happened was we came together with stakeholders across the state and had ongoing conversations. Representative Lawrence was a part of that with us. And I will say it was a very engaging process. We had online testifiers to in-person testifiers to ongoing deep conversation about different statutes. We landed at 8 different buckets. The one thing that we learned quickly is a lot of people care about attendance, but nobody's really taking the ownership of it because there's so many stakeholders across so many landscapes. It's our teachers, it's our schools, it's our counties, there's transportation components in it, there's some health components in it. It's what we look at when we look at attendance and truancy is far spread. We learned that firsthand in the committee. And so what we thought we would be able to do to help us with our 10-year effort is really give us some buckets. And what the buckets are intended to do is have community stakeholders and legislators lean into different areas of statute that we all know we need to address. And so it's really just the playbook for all of us to join into the fun of addressing this. And so we'll go quickly, but the number one bucket is just consistent definitions. The one thing that we know is that every school doesn't even define what truancy, tardy, and absence is. There's not a lot of consistency there. And so we're leaning into, we have pilot groups. There's 13 of them across the state for 3 years, geographic spread, size spread that we're gathering information from them. One of the big things that they're working on right now is definitions and how they even enter their attendance and how that shows up in certain spaces. And so some of the bills we will address will look at different attendance responses. Did you want to add anything, Representative Bakeberg?
Yeah, and I just want to give the perspective of,
Go ahead, Representative Bakeberg.
Just want to offer the perspective of just a day-to-day, like on Tuesday morning in a local elementary school, what it looks like. And so, you know, whatever time the start time, say it's 8 o'clock, you're going to have a flood of kids coming into the office. And whoever that person is that's sitting there, they have to figure out quickly why kids are late, they're getting phone calls at the same time for parents calling in, and you know they have to navigate and make some determinations. And that's why having consistent definitions is really important, so that that person that's entering the data into whatever the management system is that the school district is using or the school is using, so that's coded correctly. Because then that is reported to the state. So we're getting good information. And Mr. Shaver in his work has found some areas where some people are coding things inaccurately and they could change it and all of a sudden their consistent attendance dramatically improves. Well, it's not that there are kids in class more, it's just that it was coded. So that's that kind of basic common sense thing, that having some consistent codes and definitions, and that's where the pilot group is going to be helpful to be able to, so that we're all kind of on that level playing field, because we can have all kinds of data, but if it's being submitted inaccurately or wrong, it's not going to be good data to help us make good decisions.
Representative Keeler.
We're going to do this a lot, Chair. We'll do our best to try to go through the chair as we go back and forth. Sorry if we missed that in the process. I will add that the other area of definitions that we're looking at is actually the lane that moves into child wellness and child welfare. So what happens in truancy in attendance, but many of you maybe know or you don't, but once you get to a certain amount of days, it's referred to the county under child welfare. And this is the unique perspective that what we do in the school then transitions over to county. And so definitions of neglect and making sure that we align in those areas were important too. Bucket number two is coordinating among state and local agencies. We've said this a couple times in many spaces that our agencies tend to really love to work in silos. Love maybe isn't the word, but they do tend to work in silos. And understanding the widespread that this issue spans over, we really need our agencies to be committed to talking to each other. This also led us to understand leaning into our children's cabinet and our youth in Minnesota is critical because we have a lot of adults at the table that are having conversations when the truth is we believe it's really important that our kids advocate for themselves and what they want and need in the school systems. Did you want to add?
Representative Baper?
No, we can keep going just okay. For the sake of time.
Thank you.
Do you want
go
to
ahead.
Let me know if you want to
yeah,
add something?
I'll just
go ahead and continue.
Okay, thank you. We're not as good at this as I thought we were. Okay, sorry. So the third bucket is community engagement. This really came to light when we had our Greater Minnesota testifiers join us. One of the things that I'll bring to highlight that I think we all found really interesting was we had individuals from White Earth join us and talk about ricing and how that's such an economic impact and it's really their egg component for their community and how the school districts are often aligned and the school year is aligned around agriculture and farming. It just wasn't maybe aligned around tribal agriculture and farming. And so it was a really unique opportunity for us to question how can individuals go into the community and do the things that are economic development and smart within their communities and still get school credit for it because those are learning opportunities. We do think that people are engaging in really critical things in the community that we need to be able to capture. And I think Representative Bakeberg would like to add something.
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you. And I think one of the things that we spent a lot of time in the study group, but also in my professional role, we spend a lot of time talking about, and you'll hear me say the three R's, so rigor, relevance, and relationships. And
I'll quiz you on that later.
Yeah, later. That, there'll be a quiz on that. So, but if you think about it, you know, we automatically assume that relationships are the most important thing. And rightfully so, relationships are critically important. But if I have a really strong relationship or Representative Hill has a really strong relationship with a kid and the kid just loves him as a teacher, but the kid is like, you know, his content is super boring. Like I love Representative Hill, but boy, his content is really boring. The kid is not as likely to be engaged because it's not relevant. And that's really where we got into a lot of the conversations around education today. And I think some of the reason why we're seeing an increase in absenteeism rates is that relevance conversation. And I was at a principal workshop and we were talking about high school redesign and making high school really be relevant to kids. And for the sake of time, I won't go deep into this, but if you think about in, you know, the 1960s, what a classroom looked like, and fast forward to today, you know, there we might have a smart board or we may have some really nice technology, but the structure of the classroom is very, very similar. So thinking about how do we make education be relevant for kids, and some of that is within the structure of the day, and some of it ties into the ricing conversation or those cultural conversations for kids and family. And then rigor as well. I mean, rigor is another one. Kids want to be challenged. There's this, sometimes people say, kids today. Kids want to be challenged. And those of you that work with kids on a daily basis, they're hungering for that. So that's where if we have kind of that sweet sauce of strong relationships with rigorous, relevant curriculum, kids will be engaged. But there are some decisions that are made here that tie our hands at the school district level in those areas. So Yeah.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. Bucket number four is some MDE-specific recommendations. I think we'll go into that a little bit more with our bills, but similar to what Mr. Shaver was saying, we would like to know where we stand percentage-wise, because we don't need to spend a ton of time on those kids who are just barely over the limit. It's really those chronically absent, continual annual kids that we would like to be able to put more of our services in. That's bucket four. Bucket number five is this increase data sharing between schools and counties. So like I mentioned before, what happens is your attendance record then gets sent over to counties, and then there's this county back and forth conversation. Anybody who works in schools understands this. When we've had many conversations with school districts and counties that say that there's this like hiccup when we talk to each other. We're trying to dig down into that. Is there actually privacy issues that we need to share? We know we need to be protective of kids' data, but we don't want to be redundant in getting information, especially sensitive information from families. And so bucket five is really taking a deep dive in our privacy with kids, but also being able to share adequate information back and forth with that. Bucket six is dedicated staff, which this was an interesting conversation. Many of you know, I spent a lot of time in the school district doing everything but being a teacher. I was the sub coordinator, which thank everybody who does that job. That is not the best job in the world. I was also the front desk individual that welcomed your kids when they were tardy or late to school, and I served as an Indian education liaison. And so what I know is that we're having a lot of conversations about, you know, adding more social workers and more high-level licensed staff in our schools. And I think we really, for effective and efficiency with our money, really need to explore what these liaison and support system roles can be in our school system. I think liaisons are really the heart of relationships. We don't need high-level licensing. So if you think of getting qualified individuals in schools, we just think it's a lane that we can really explore. If anybody's been a liaison or any like type of support staff or teachers who have leaned on support staff, they're really critical parts of this this entire population. But trying to figure out how can we bridge an individual to do the work with both the schools and the counties without having these really high licensing requirements.
Representative Bakeberg.
Yeah, if I can jump in on that, I will just tell you that oftentimes there are amazing people within our communities, and they are not able to meet a licensure requirement. So when we say that they have to have a licensure requirement, we are having our students miss out on an opportunity to work with an amazing individual who, frankly, will better meet their needs than someone who has been licensed. So we have to think differently, and we have to move beyond having to make sure that everyone has a certain license. And, you know, we have some opportunities, and we met about some different pathway programs. You know, Representative Mueller and I serve on the labor and workforce. That's going to be a hard lift for some of our outside groups. They hear me say that, and they're going to be very nervous about it. My challenge is we either hire someone, and to think about this, we either hire someone who's going to be a really good fit for kids and knows those kids really well, and maybe they don't have a license, or oftentimes we're not able to find someone. That's the reality for schools. So let's think differently. Let's think creatively and empower our local schools to be able to serve the needs of kids.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. And bucket number seven is all around transportation. That was one of the big things that came to light, along with many other things, but was the actual act of getting kids to school. If any of you sit on the Transportation Committee, there is a lot of statutes that align in there as far as like the 2-mile radius for kids getting to school, who can pick up kids. A lot leans on our principals. And again, thinking outside the box a little bit, who else? I mean, Representative Bakeberg's a principal, and I visited his school, and I'm sure that there's better things that he should be doing rather than going out and physically picking up kids. And so there's a lot of language that we can dig into when it comes to the transportation component, making sure that kids are safely arriving to school and getting home or their location after. Then the last bucket, did you want to add anything on that? The last bucket is bucket number 8, which is the community supports. One thing we heard a lot about is that all schools, most schools, have some sort of community outside entities that are either trying to or currently partnering and working with our students, whether it's after school programming, mental health supports, outside advocacy and education. And so we really wanted to explore what's already happening in our schools, how we're protecting that work in our schools, and how we can potentially expand that work in other community areas in our school. And so with that, I know that that's a really quick wrap up. I do want to just take a quick minute to see if Representative Lawrence wanted to add anything, because he was the only other member that served on that study group with us. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Representative Lawrence?
Madam Chair, I think they covered it well. Thank you.
Right. Very good.
Great. Thanks. So with that, I think if we're okay, we'll move on to the bills that we have in front of us, unless we want to move on to any member questions regarding the 8 buckets.
Maybe let's go on to the bills, and we'll have member discussion. Let somebody feels really driven. We have a testimony, too, after the bills. Yeah, so member discussion will take place after the public testimony. So go ahead and present your bills, and then we'll move on to public testimony and then member discussion. So who's going to start on this one? Representative Keeler.
Thank you. Do we need to move the bills? No, so we're just talking about them, and then we'll, okay, thank you. I know we're doing this a little bit different, so I want to make sure that we don't miss anything. So we're going to start with House File 62 in your packet. We will be doing an amendment on this later, but one thing I want to clarify that I feel like is confusing about this is a landing spot. So everything that is in House File 62 is in statute already somewhere else. And I know that we had nonpartisan staff help put this together. And so if there's any questions that anybody has, I just want to make sure we're real clear that when we're looking at House File 62, this is not any new language. This is a landing spot to try to bring a chronological order of how attendance works in this state, hoping that, again, people look at this and find areas that they would like to help us dive into. It starts all the way from age of instruction. In the state of Minnesota, we have law requiring that our kids have to go to school at a certain age. District of residency, where your kid is required to go to school, or how a district is required to accept a child in your school. Non-public school systems reporting. Also the transportation piece, as we mentioned, if there's anybody who really wants to dive into the transportation area, I don't know if any of you sit on that committee, there's some critical areas in there. Students with disabilities, funding starts to lean over into the Representative Bakeberg lane, just because this is a policy committee, so making sure that if you're looking at the funding component, we go there. Absences on how we report is obviously a major piece of that. This goes into like who can report, who they report to. Some of those things are really interesting that we've looked into. And then moving into the removal, there is statute that tells us that if a student misses so much school at some point, you have to be removed from the attendance roll. And so there's statute around that. We have a lot of bills and issues that we're addressing there. Truancy as a whole, there's a lot of language that starts to roll into the 260 components of statute, which starts to move over into child welfare, so if anybody sits in that space. Then moving into maltreatment, this is when you're chronically missing school, it becomes negligent as a parent, all the way to the criminal penalties that happen to parents and guardians if your children are not attending school. We understand there is a lot more that we can look at. This is, again, the guiding post for us to just start honest conversations of areas that we believe we need to address it. And House File 62 was the best way for us to have a landing spot. We've done this in other areas like the charter schools, just to make sure we have one statute area that everybody can look at. And so that's that outline. Chair, would you like us just to roll through and move to the next one? I feel like weird that we're not stopping and asking any questions, but
Well, I think we'll move on because, it is kind of an odd sequence here, but let's move on. And then we'll do public testimony. And
sure.
Then. So, members, if you do have questions, just jot them down, if you would, about these various bills. And we'll look at them as one giant package, kind of.
So then we're moving on to House File 1030. What this, so all of these bills, I'll say, we're treating as vehicle bills for us to work on. We know that we're going to be working on amendments from these places. We'll be working with our staff and nonpartisan staff to get things in the format that we like. And so just knowing that these are the starting process that we will build off of. 1030, what it does is that we already have reporting mechanisms that go out to parents and guardians, and a whole list of things that we share in that information. You look on the last line, point 2.13 and 2.14, we're just asking that on that information that's sent out to parents is that we're adding the snapshot of their attendance, because we talk a lot about, and I think Representative Bakeberg has brought this up in other spaces, that it's one thing to see on a snapshot if your kid is struggling in math. And you know it's the math rigor or the curriculum in math that's hard. If as a parent I can line up and see, well, my kid missed 26 days in math, maybe math isn't that hard for them. Maybe they just need to go to math class. Like, that helps us to have conversations within our own homes about how maybe we can lean in to that. So that's all House File 1030 is doing. We do know that the agencies and the schools are reporting this information. We would just like it to get back and out to our hands a little bit quicker so that we can be part of the solution for our kids rather than being the last ones that connect these dots together. With that, Representative Bakeberg is carrying the other three, so we'll move it over to him, Chair.
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to move into House File 1053, and Representative Keeler talked about the removal from attendance roll, what you'll commonly hear that referred to as a 15-day drop. So House File 1053 is really clarifying when a student reaches that 15-day drop. So what that means is the student is not in school for 15 consecutive days. Now, it makes a lot of sense from a funding standpoint that we as a school district or school districts should not be collecting funds for kids that are not there. That I understand that. The issue at a very basic level with that statute and its subdivision 9 and House File 62, if you want to read the language. But the issue is that if a student is dropped from, you know, Minnetonka Public Schools, that student is no longer on the rolls for Minnetonka because they can't collect funding for them. But where does the student go? The student disappears. So the concern is that the student doesn't re-enroll. So to kind of give you a lens from my principal lens, every fall we are going through, and once we hit 15 days of school, okay, these few kids are not here anymore. And we maybe didn't get records requests for them, or maybe the other district didn't request them. They may have moved out of state, but we want to be really diligent in making sure that the kids that didn't show up on the first day of school at our district, that they're going to school somewhere. So the bigger issue is no one really owns the kid, and no one is responsible from a statewide standpoint. If the student stays within the community that I live in, or if they stay even in Scott County, it's pretty easy to navigate because I can work with the county. The issue happens when a student leaves Scott County and maybe goes to Hennepin or Mille Lacs. Well, we don't have a way to communicate. So House File 1053 is just very simply saying that the department is responsible for those students once we drop them. That's the agency that would be able to oversee. I've had some conversations with different stakeholders, and there's some really good ideas that they've offered already around this bill. One of them is just moving to unexcused, so it's only an unexcused 15-day drop. And then another idea was to have us do a mandated report to the county so that we're flagging and making our local county aware. All good ideas, and very open to all of those ideas to talk through. But just very simply, House File 1053 says that the Department of Education is responsible for those kids, and then the department needs to re-enroll, help families re-enroll their student into a school where they're living. All right. So the next two bills are honestly very similar in nature. I'm going to go to 1054 first. And basically what both of the next two bills aim to do is really address that lag that Mr. Shaver talked about. Right now, during the state fair time, when the MCA results come out and the press release comes out, the attendance data is 2 years lagging. Okay, and Mr. Shaver said we can and we should be having current data available to us to make decisions. So what 1054 says is that you need to report your current year attendance data the same as you report your achievement data. Okay, and then House File 1413 does the exact same thing. It also adds a definition of consistent attendance within the statute. So it just provides a lot of clarity. I want to recognize Ms. Parra for her work patience, I should say, with us about, well, what about this and what about this? So what it does is just that the department would need to post consistent attendance data for each school year no later than September 1st, and that would just match what they're doing for achievement data. So the MCAs, those statewide results would be for current year. That gives us good data legislatively, but also at the school district level to make the best decisions. So those are the three bills that I had, and the five bills as a starting point. So I would just turn it over to you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so we're ready for a public testimony then, I'd say, next. So how we'll handle this, we have four testifiers. I'm gonna call their names right now and just ask them to come sit in the chairs behind the testimony desk there. So Jessica Webster, Aaron Sandmark, Ashley Hightower, and then whoever from the Minnesota Department of Education is here. And what we'll do is we'll start with Jessica Webster with legal aid, and then the others can kind of be ready to roll here. And go ahead and state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid, also representing the Minnesota Disability Law Center. We represent Minnesota children and youth who have low wealth statewide. First, I just want to thank Representative Keeler and Representative Bakeberg for this heavy lift on a very complicated topic. I have one narrow concern that we testified about before session that I just wanted to mention today. I think Representative Keeler would tell me, take a breath. This is a 10-year effort. Not everything has to be fixed right now. So I totally get that. And I get that there may not even be an amendment this year, but I just wanted to raise it. So Legal Aid has this narrow concern that I think fits in the bucket around dedicated staff and coordination. And it's just that we don't want children with disabilities to be referred to child protection or unenrolled where their disability explains why they've been absent. I think Representative Bakeberg, talked about whether unexcused absences might be a new concept in the count or whatnot. And I understand these bills are about coordination and they're guideposts to create a response, but we are seeing at the Disability Law Center kids who have been referred to child protection or have been unenrolled, and their IEP team just hasn't had a recent meeting with the child or the family to maybe find out and explain what's going on. So it's kind of a narrow little box that we're speaking from. It's not the big global thing I think that everybody will be focused on, but I just didn't want it to get lost in the mix. So I appreciate your consideration and I appreciate you hearing me out.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Aaron Sandmark. And please introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Hello. Hello, and thank you for your time, Committee Chair Bennett and members. I'm Aaron Sandsmark here on behalf of Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition. I'm testifying today to acknowledge the immense impact of chronic absenteeism in our schools and share my support for efforts that tackle this issue, but also bring forward to you what we consider a central piece and what was mentioned also by Matt Schaefer earlier, suspensions. What I would ask for the bill authors to consider as they move forward in this collaborative effort to get our students back into schools is to look at the role of exclusionary discipline and how it impacts absenteeism. It seems like a simple connection to make, but I feel like we have across the state lacked acknowledgement of that relationship. Districts, the state, and you all here have the power to change school pushout in its relationship to school absenteeism. Unnecessary and excessive suspension practices play into the absenteeism data. Every day a child misses instruction due to suspension counts towards their chronic absenteeism. One way to improve attendance is by using alternatives to suspensions that keep kids in the building and learning. We want our students in school. That's what Solutions Not Suspensions is all about. We want our kids to have the opportunity to learn, grow, and receive the education that they have the right to have. Before finalizing these bills, please consider, and the long trajectory of these bills and considering absenteeism in general, please consider the impact of suspensions, exclusion, and its impact on absenteeism. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Ashley Hightower. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Ashley Hightower. I am with Hennepin County Attorney's Office Be at School program. We're the educational neglect and truancy program for Hennepin County's K through 12 youth. We are Minnesota's largest truancy and educational neglect program. On average, we receive around 10,000 referrals per year per academic school year. This year, we're at 6,223 referrals. I want to thank Representative Bakeberg and Representative Keeler for being leaders in this attendance movement, as it is extremely critical to our educational systems. I would like to begin by expressing the severity of the 15-day drop mandate. We believe that the proposed bill is a great starting point in getting the Department of Education involved in this issue, but we still need more. Last year, our program received 658 students flagged as 15-day dropped or not enrolled. This year, we're currently at 536 students. When a student is 15-day dropped from enrollment, they then become a child in need of protection or services as a habitual truant, and they are in violation of Statute 120A.22, compulsory instruction, stating the students 7 through 17 must receive instruction until they have graduated. If schools do not send this mandated report to the county, counties do not receive these records from anywhere else stating that the student has been dropped from enrollment. The information that the student has been dropped is only collected by the Department of Education for per pupil funding purposes. Per the new proposed bill, if the school has not submitted the 15-day drop to the county, the Department of Education would then become the mandated reporter, as they are the record holder of this information. Having the department give families resources and sending out a letter is just not enough. Stating that they may work with the county attorneys isn't enough. They need to report and communicate this educational neglect to the county. The county has the ability and obligation to provide services and stay open with the student and family until we have ensured that they have re-enrolled in school and that they have supports needed to succeed. The county has the ability to conduct house visits, review updated contact information at the state level, and provide resources to address truancy barriers. This bill stresses the importance that if we are going to have solutions, our systems need to communicate and collaborate more effectively. Information sharing needs to be done at a quicker pace. We can't wait a month for systems to update before we receive this information. Every day that passes is a day that student is not in school. We receive reports for students that have been out of school for not just 2 weeks, 2 months, but sometimes for several years, all because our systems aren't talking to each other. These students are falling through the cracks because of a funding policy. To conclude, the remainder of the bills proposed, a big yes. We need to start discussing attendance. We need to not only have references of statutes governing student attendance, but consistent definitions that address the root cause of truancy and reflect the realities our students are facing. We need to revisit Minnesota's truancy statutes, particularly the definitions that dictate responses based on a student's age. Currently, the law presumes that a student's absence from school is the caretaker's responsibility if the student is under 12. But once the student turns 12, the absence is presumed to be the child's intent. This presumption not only ignores the barriers that students face, but sets them up for failure in early system involvement. A public awareness campaign is needed to promote and educate our community about the importance of school attendance. Attendance needs to be tracked and assessed at the state level. The state should know and evaluate not only the percentage of students, not only the percentage of days the students was absent from school, but also not enrolled. Our students, schools, and community deserve a better than reevaluating the previous school year's information. This information should be formulated quarterly. Attendance is a critical indicator of the many underlying barriers our students face, and we can't live a year behind in our results and efforts and expect impactful changes. This is real-time work that deserves prompt attention. Our students face enough barriers that our delaying communication and data processing shouldn't be one of them. Thank you for your time. And as always, I'm here to talk about our program and any interest you have in about learning about attendance and our experience in attendance and our proposed bills for this session. Thank you.
Thank you. And then we have somebody here from MDE, I believe. Go ahead and state your name for the record and begin.
Absolutely. All right. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Angela Mansfield. I am the Assistant Commissioner of the Office of Educational Opportunity at MDE. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on this very important issue. At the Minnesota Department of Education, we see significant common ground on these bills. We fully support the principle that families deserve timely information about their children's attendance, which is crucial for student success. Currently, local schools track real-time attendance data through their student information systems. They have established strong relationships with families and understand the local context necessary for effectively addressing attendance challenges, making them uniquely situated to share this data with families. Attendance is a crucial focus area of our Compass statewide support system. And through Compass, we are publishing an attendance guidebook, and providing regional support to districts to promote consistent attendance and decrease chronic absenteeism within our Minnesota MTSS framework for continuous improvement. One key strategy involves guiding districts to use local attendance data to enhance student-family-school relationships. Schools equipped with accurate records and community insights are ideally positioned to promote re-enrollment or connect families with relevant local resources when students unenroll. As we develop statewide solutions, we also recognize the critical need for uniform definition of consistent attendance and valid systems for reliable reporting. This standardization ensures comparable data across districts, facilitates effective evaluation of interventions that are at play, and maintains the information's utilities for families and policymakers. We are actively assessing which data can be collected and reported as just-in-time data to all partners with minimal burden on our districts and schools. We're really excited to collaborate with this committee on strategies to support our districts and schools in their ongoing attendance and re-enrollment efforts. I appreciate the consideration and time, and happy to answer any questions that might come up.
Thank you very much. So that is the end of our public testimony. So what we're going to do now is move on to member discussion. And members, if you have a question, please catch the eye of Ms. Miller here, and she'll write your name down. And before we do that, I just have a clarification question, actually, I'd like to ask. And it has to do, I don't know if it'd be Mr. Shaver or our bill authors, but does the attendance definitions that are currently in place, does that include chronic tardiness? I just remember as a teacher, first grade, we had, once in a while you'd have a student who was chronically an hour late, and that was reading instruction. Does it include that, or is that something we just need to address? I just want to know what we're talking about as we're talking about attendance. Mr. Shaver, did you want to address that?
Madam Chair, great question. I'd also love to hear from Representative slash Principal Bakeberg on how y'all talk about it at the middle school level. This is one of the big learnings, I think, from the work that we've done, is that we've found that even within the same school district, schools are coding tardies completely differently. And it makes the data noisier and harder to understand. That there are some school districts in the state, you know, is it an hour late that counts as a tardy? Is it a half day late that counts as a tardy? Do those tardies end up counting? Do you add enough of them up together? Do they end up as an unexcused absence or not? There's not a lot of guidance or law defining that. So it's a little bit of the wild, wild west, and that makes the apples-to-apples comparison from district to district a little bit more challenging because we haven't set a standard for that.
Either Representative Bakeberg?
Yeah, just from a principal standpoint, that is, you know, it's going to be outlined in the staff handbook. MSBA has provided good guidance around attendance, and depends on the grade, but yeah, it's, and I would echo what Mr. Shaver said. You know, it's easier in smaller districts because it's, you know, you have one elementary school, you have one middle school, one high school, so you can be consistent with yourself. But when you get into bigger districts, and then it's also that person at the front desk. And, well, I just want to get the kids moving, and to no one's fault, it's just the reality of moving kids and getting them back to class on time. So yeah, it's something that I think would be helpful to be clear with some guidance for schools even more than we already are.
Thank you. Yeah, I found as a teacher that was critical, and chronic tardiness can be just as devastating for a student as being chronically absent too. So thanks for answering that. And members, do we have, Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Bakeberg and Representative Keeler, for your work. It's you've done a lot, and I commend you for working together, and the bipartisanship here is really a pleasure to see today. And we're all taking notes, I think. So good work. I just wanted to follow up on the talking discussion you had on, was it Maryland, the state that did the?
Rhode Island,
okay. I just wanted to learn a little bit more about that. Certainly having learned that or discovered that, you would have dug in a little deeper into how they actually did that. You said they didn't have a bill. And so I'm just really interested to learn more if that's something we could replicate, because we don't need to reinvent that if they're doing it well and if that movement is afoot. Thank you.
Looks like Mr. Shaver is going to take that one. Mr. Shaver.
Madam Chair, Representative Bierman, thank you for the question. Can we and should we, I think, are two different things I'm thinking about in response to your question. We absolutely should. Do we have the capacity and the willingness and the urgency to do that? That's not a question for me to answer, right? It was Rhode Island State Department of Education who decided to make that happen and to stand that up. And I think we absolutely should as a state. I think it's critical to be able to do that, to stand it up, because it is making an impact. It is getting more kids into school on a regular basis.
Representative Bierman, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, just, I mean, if we all agree that it should be done and there's a roadmap, and it would be critical, as everybody spoke about the importance of real time as you're trying to analyze by grade, by building, I think it's a wonderful starting point. So I hope we can move forward on that. Thanks.
And I think MPE wanted to chime in as well, and then I'll do a Representative Keeler. Go ahead and introduce yourself and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bierman, for the question. For the record, my name is Megan Adeola. I'm the Legislative Policy Manager for the Minnesota Department of Education. And thank you, Representative Bierman, for the question, because I think we, to address the can we question, we're going to talk about the thing that nobody wants to talk about, is the dollars associated. The total population of the state of Rhode Island is a fraction of our state's total student population. So when we're talking about the number, the amount of work, it is massively different. And we are happy to consider, you know, modeling what this could look like. What would the real dollars be? But it would be a creation of an entirely new data system, training all of our school administrators, all of our principals on how to use it and report efficiently and consistently. So I do want to just say, I don't want to belabor the point because this is the policy committee, and I do want to talk about the great policy areas where there's a lot of alignment, but that is just, I think, necessary context for the conversation. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Keeler, you wanted to comment.
Yep, thank you, Chair. I would add that though they probably didn't have depths of policy for the outcome, they have a clear understanding of the input, which is something we don't have yet. Like our definitions, we don't even have a definition in statute that tells us what an elementary school, a middle school, and a high school is to make sure we're aligning by our grades appropriately. And so I think if we ever want to get to that outcome, one thing we need to do for MDE is to make sure the input is more streamlined so that we're not like desegregating it and then going out and asking schools to re-enter, you know, something appropriately. That's part of what the timing lag is. That's part of what the issue is. And so I think as we build towards knowing the money cost of building a system, what we are in control of policy-wise is the input to make sure that we're as streamlined as we can possibly be. That's why the definitions is bucket number one.
Representative Bierman? Okay. All right, Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair Bennett, and thank you, Representative Keeler and Representative Bigberg. This is fantastic work. I have so many different thoughts and questions, but I'm going to talk about that offline. I would love to join your committee and help with this work. So what I want to talk about, though, is I have a question for MDE, if MDE could come back up. Thank you.
All right. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record again, please.
Megan Adeola, Legislative Policy Manager with MDE.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So my question is, you talked about some things that are ongoing. So are there current guidelines for attendance reporting right now? Are they consistent and are districts following it? Or is the issue that we don't have current guidelines?
Ms. Adeola, is
yes,
that correct?
Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you. I want to make sure I'm
correct,
pronouncing
Madam Chair.
Correctly.
Thank you for the question, Representative Green. Yes, we do currently issue guidance to our districts on how to code attendance. I am very much happy to hear some anecdotal stories from Representative Bakeberg, who I'm sure has more hands on this data on a daily basis than I do. But we do offer guidance on how they should be coding these things. This is part of the problem that I think we've presented consistently that like definitions are an issue. So there's not something that we can cite back to for the tardy that is 2.5 hours, but not 3 hours. There's not like a binding way for us to say you have to follow that. Part of the other issue is that in our current system of reporting, these are reported through the student information systems, which vary by the district's choice of vendor. So some of the vendors may not have, you know, may have more inclusive options than the vendor in the district next door. So that, I think Representative Keeler touched a little bit on some of the, just like the data we're getting is kind of all over the map. And we, you know, as responsible stewards want to support efforts to make that more consistent so that it is, you know, verifiable in a faster rate, but we do issue guidance. We know that it's an ongoing conversation and we're a continuous improvement agency. So this conversation is already guiding how we're communicating with schools through our Compass team, through our data team. And we look forward to being able to, you know, point to something in law that is, that meets some of the confusion that we're hearing in the field. So.
Representative Keeler?
Yes. I don't want to interrupt your questions, but I do think that Mr. Shaver actually has a prime example for a district that he helped like change their attendance rating based on MDE's guidance around an individual. I think it's important for us to understand how like in real time some of the guidance can change some of the data.
Mr. Shaver.
Thank you so much, Chair Bennett. A district, I'm going to try and leave the name out just because it's not really relevant, one of the 15 largest districts in the state happened to correspond with somebody who does attendance work for them because we've been involved in all of this, and they had reached out asking about different attendance reporting. They'd noticed some other districts were reporting it a little bit differently, and that, you know, if they reported it like another district, their consistent attendance data would improve by 5, 6, 7%, and, you know, I'd asked them if they had taken a look at MDE's implementing ESSA consistent attendance FAQ that was posted on MDE's website in like March of 2019, where it talked about this definition of in attendance. This is in one of the bills that are being considered today, that if a student is with an employee of the district, they're considered in attendance for the purpose of chronic absenteeism and consistent attendance. And I got this response back from a person who is very smart, very good at their job, who just said, I'm flabbergasted. I have to change all of these codes. We've been doing this wrong this entire time, and our attendance rates are going to be better because of that. That's one of those, like, that's heartwarming but bad stories of a system failure, right? These are very smart people working in very large districts who, because we don't have clear definitions in law, are lost, right? And the impact is on our kids, right? Like, if we're coding attendance incorrectly, we're bringing kids closer to involvement with county level workforce, right? Level sanctions, right? We're misdirecting resources, right, for kids who really need it the most. If those definitions aren't clear, and we got to go beyond something sitting on a website somewhere to make sure that's very clear. And I think that there's a role for the legislature, humbly, that can help set that that in stone for districts. So we have apples to apples throughout the state.
You represent Keeler.
I would just say, if districts want to look at that page, it's really helpful to start. I mean, like, some of the things we don't need to do legislation to make the changes on. Some things districts just need to take it upon themselves to look at some of these frequently asked questions and then align them. And we may be surprised at how far we will get in the state by just schools leaning into those 2019 frequently asked questions. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much for those answers. That was great to kind of just get a better feel for what the inconsistencies throughout the state and what we can do to move this. And then my second thought and question is just about, you know, this is the business of education. And I know that in my experience as a board member, the earlier that we educate and the earlier we talk about things and make things just how we do things, the better it is. And I saw in here a lot, like, you have chronic absenteeism year after year. And so I would push back a little bit on MDE, on the campaign in Rhode Island. I have dug into that campaign. My background's in public relations and marketing work and branding work. And a lot of that is just education, an education throughout the entire state, and a clear message, and educating families and students about the importance. And so I think you can educate, I would think, well, I know you can educate if you have a clear message to this. It's going to cost you the same if you do 5,000 people or 100,000 people if you're using all the same mediums. And so I wanted to just put that out there. It's more of a comment than anything. If you want to reply and respond, you can. But that's how I would love to look at this and join the team to help.
Did anybody want to comment? Representative Bakeberg?
I would agree. I mean, I think you know, whether you're communicating to 5,000 people or whether you're communicating statewide, a lot of the avenues for communication that we use today, you're going to use the same tools. So I would join you in challenging the department to help us move forward together.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. Just one more quick question. And I think, too, that what I like about the approach that you guys have taken and what you've brought to us is it's very comprehensive. It's a very complex issue, but it's looking at every single angle. There's not one silver bullet that's going to fix this. And so I don't think this is something that falls on local control only. I think there's a role for local control, but I absolutely think this is a statewide issue, and it impacts everything. It impacts our students' mental health, which we hear all of us talking about. It impacts academic achievement. It impacts families and relationship and purpose, you know, which is what, so just my last comment there. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is for MDE, if they would come up, please. Thank you. Sorry, Ms. Athiola. I think you anticipated me, however. So let me just give a little bit of context before I ask this question. I attend a conference every year that kind of goes through legislative education, educators and legislators and what's going on around the country, and this was the number one topic. Chronic absenteeism was the number one topic. Number two was literacy, FYI. So this is the number one topic. And states that are doing this well have the ability to kind of have clear leadership from the departments of education and the ability to give empowerment to the local entities to create innovative ideas. So having both of those prongs together, clear guidance from the DOE for the local schools, but also giving incentivizing innovation so that they can create those plans that will work with their communities. So I just wanted a clarifying question, Madam Chair. One of the things that I thought I heard when the department was talking about this was that they said that currently local schools track the real-time data and have a better relationship with the students and they have better context, and that they should share the data with the family. Some of the bills that we have here are putting more emphasis on the responsibility of the department. So my question is, first of all, this is something that's been going on since 2019. How many people at the department are dedicated working on chronic absenteeism, since obviously this isn't a new issue that has cropped up just in 2025? Now, let me also say, sorry, Madam Chair, I do understand that a pandemic happened and the world fell apart. Like, I get that. But this isn't new. So how much time of the 500 people that are working at MDE are focused on chronic absenteeism?
Ms. Audiola.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for the question, Representative Mueller. Any opportunity I have to be able to elevate the great work that our MDE staff are doing is exactly why I want to be here. So currently, our attendance efforts are largely led by two of our divisions at our agency. So our COMPASS, I am not going to get the acronym right, but it's continuous improvement statewide supports, working in close collaboration with our Minnesota Center or Service Cooperatives and Regional Centers of Excellence. And since the conversation has been clear that data is a huge part of this, our data practices and analytics team both those divisions are currently, I believe we have an offer pending for one attendance specialist in COMPASS and one attendance specialist. I believe we're posting the position for a data practices person to really look at this data and provide some of the updated guidance, some of the collaboration with the study group that they've been a good partner in. So I believe in our current position, we will have four regional attendance support specialists based out of those more local centers, and then two positions at the department that will have attendance in their primary responsibilities.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm glad to hear that we are deciding that there needs to be some more guidance, and some that even though we've had these entities, COMPASS and the data practices and leadership, I'm glad to hear that we're going to start hiring someone specific for attendance. That's encouraging to hear. You know, it's with MDE's job to provide guidance with our schools, it's really important that we're able to do that with clarity. And I appreciate Representative Keeler and Representative Bakeberg saying that, you know, we need that. We need that, and we understand that it's important for us to have that in law. And but as we're hearing from other places, and I heard it around the country when I go to this national, conference, responding to the problem, anticipating to the problem, really is what DOE is supposed to be doing. And so I find it really encouraging, but also frustrating that we're waiting for a work study group to say, hey, DOE, let's get some work done. So thank you for responding to it, and thank you for answering the question. I'm really looking forward to seeing how these pilot programs work in those 13 schools, because, you know, we don't have time to wait. We don't have time to wait. I was one of those sub-coordinators, and I was one of the people that also had to call parents when their kiddos didn't show up. I was one of the attendance officers. And we simply don't have time to wait for legislation to say, well, let's kind of see how we can do, and let's see. We should have been seeing this problem and doing something about it. We don't need to have legislation for everything, as Keeler has said, and we could have had DOE leading on it, and instead it's important to see now that we're catching up to that. So thank you, Madam Chair, and I look forward to seeing how we do this better in the future.
Representative Fogelman.
Thank you, Chair Bennett. I don't really have a question, but one of the schools in my district was part of UAKIM's legislation, and I got to meet with them before session started and talk to them about that program, and they shared some stuff with me, so I just wanted to share it with you guys. They hired a coordinator. I believe he's a retired police officer, and I think he is from the metro area. And as Representative Bakeberg has said, I mean, he stresses the relationships with the students and how important that is. And that has made a difference. I think he works 25 hours a week. The struggles they have is still working with the parents, I think, is one of their biggest struggles. But they have been able to, he said, from when he started at the beginning of the year to when I was there in January, he really talked about the relationships he's built with the students and some of those chronic absentees or late ones. And the biggest problem they have is that we have a lot of immigrant students, and they are working, and they are working full-time jobs, some of them, and they're working overnights. So that's what's causing the late to schools or the not coming at all. He does go to pick kids up. He makes a lot of phone calls to the kids. And again, it's just I'm continuing on that whole relationship building. So I hope that, I mean, I can share this with you guys, too, if you want the results of what they said. I'm more than happy to share that with you. But I think it's important to know, and I appreciate you guys bringing this forward. So thank you very much.
I know there is a report coming out later this spring, so we'll hear more on that, too. But thank you for sharing that. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Bennett. And just want to send a message of thanks to Rep. Keeler and Rep. Bakeberg for this incredible work and shining a light on this important issue here in Minnesota, in every community in Minnesota. I have two quick questions, and the first one is designed more to highlight some of the work that I know that has been ongoing, but I wanted to make sure that people present here today were able to hear more about it. I want you to talk a little bit more about the voices that you've brought around this question, not just internal voices. You know, I'm thinking about different groups like school counselors, school psychologists, case managers, et cetera, but community groups and community leaders that you've engaged. I know you touched on it, but I really think that's an important part of this story. And then one short follow-up, Chair.
Who would like to take that one?
Sure.
Representative Keeler?
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the question. Quickly looking over our overview of minutes, just to give you kind of the overview of how we structured these conversations, it was critically important for Representative Bakeberg and I to do our best to make sure everybody was at the table for these conversations. I think we started with just us as legislators. We expanded to 23 different stakeholders, Ed Allies, different counties, different foundations showed up. We had social workers associations. We had different people from police departments, school boards, principals associations. And our youth voice was a part of that. We also moved on and actually had different areas of schools that are working across the state, particularly Greater Minnesota. We had an entire day that was virtual because we often know the Greater Minnesota narrative is missed, and that was critical. And so how we set this up was we did every other meeting was in person and then online in hopes that we gained more of that Greater Minnesota voice. It was then important that we talk to students. We had an entire meeting that was just hearing the student voices, which I think all of us will say was probably the best. It was the hearing that we all probably could have had last longer, and we had students participate from across the state, young parents to individuals who were having medical issues. Like, it was actually very insightful for us. We did have conversations, particularly with the
pilot groups. We had them talk to us. Oh, she left. But to highlight what they were doing. So we learned about the different unique things that each group was doing. And then we've always had the agency alongside us with some of our critical stakeholders. I think, who else do you want to add? Bakeberg, I'm sure that I missed people.
Representative Bakeberg.
Yeah, I just wanted to highlight, we tried to dig into some of the connections between counties and school districts, and the Shakopee School District is doing really good work with Scott County. So they came in October and shared the work that they were doing. And what we made a goal of, you know, we were on site, but then we also did virtual because we wanted to make sure that, and we went back and forth. We would do an on-site meeting and then a virtual meeting so that we were sure that we were reaching into every space across Minnesota that we could. I think, honestly, one of the more powerful, and Representative Keeler talked about this, was when we were hearing from students and the different types of students and programs that we offer to kids across Minnesota. So we heard from students that were struggling with depression and anxiety, young parents, students in alternative programs, and just hearing their perspective, because sometimes we hear about the kids who come here. And so it was powerful for me to be able to hear the different lenses and the different realities for kids. It was good. We heard from parents. We heard from, all of the school groups across the board. So it was, I'm sure we missed someone. So I'll apologize for that. But I would just invite them to the table to have a conversation.
Representative Hill,
great.
Follow up.
No, I just want to celebrate that and point to it as a model of, taking a deep dive, getting our arms around this issue in total. And I just also wanted to point out and highlight, Mr. Schaefer, I see you over there. Like a true educator, you've covertly given us all a homework back home. And so I really encourage our members, the 12 of us up here on the bench, to take our cheat sheet with us and talk to school leaders and students and families that are part of the school districts back home to learn more from what's happening in your corner of the state. So thank you all. Wonderful. Thanks for the homework, Mr. Schaefer.
For any comments on the homework?
Madam Chair, Representative Hill, if you get the paper signed by your superintendent, Representative Hill, and then turn that back into me by next education policy hearing Wednesday, you got about a week.
Lee Jordan, would you like to make some comments or questions?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. A lot of my questions have been answered, so I just really want to thank you, Representative Bakeberg, and thank you, Representative Keeler, for working together and working so bipartisanly on this. It sounds really basic that kids should be in school, and maybe it is, but it's, we say a lot of things should be easy, and then we find out that there's all these other little things here. So I also really want to thank you for taking the summer and taking the interim to really work on these bills. That is a lot of work. So I see you both. You deserve some roses, and thank you to everyone else in this room that worked throughout the year. This is what good legislation is kind of founded on, is taking those basic ideas, realizing that there's maybe a big data piece or something. It's not a magic wand. There's all these little things. So thank you for that. Really proud and happy to work with you both. Thanks.
All right, before I turn it over to our bill authors for closing, I also want to say thank you. Kudos to both of you for all this work. I can see what a huge issue this is, and you're basically taking a shovel full of soil right now into what's really a dump truck or more full. So thank you for doing that. And it seems like as I'm listening to this throughout history, I'm thinking back because I love history. I'm sure attendance started out more as a bookkeeping thing for funding, and it has turned into something very much an educational item, and just shifting that paradigm to what attendance really is, I think, is important for all of us. And thank you both for digging into this. My question for you don't have to answer this, but is after you're done with this 10 years from now, what next big issue are you going to take on? Because you're like... You're like the dynamic duo. I will just say that, and I appreciate the bipartisan work as well. So you don't have to answer that, I know. But thank you. I'll just, any closing comments? Representative Bakeberg, you want to start it out?
Oh, boy. So many things going through my mind after that question. I'll stick to this topic. So I think, thank you for a good conversation, and I'll just close by, by just saying and just really challenging us to think differently about how we do things. Just because we've always done it one way doesn't mean it's right. And, you know, we talked about some of the licensure pieces and getting good people, the right people in front of kids really, really matters. I thank all of you. I thank Representative Keeler, Mr. Shaver for his work. Like, and we started by talking about this is just the beginning of conversations, and we need to continue to have those, and we need to lean into some of the more difficult ones. One of the difficult ones that wasn't talked about is what does accountability look like within this? So I'll just leave that out there and just say that is a place where we're going to have a difference of opinion and how do we work to be able to hold kids and families accountable. But at the end of the day, how do we get kids to school? Because if they're not at school and this is really what it boils down to for me. If a kid is not at school, they're not learning math. They're not learning to read. They're not, you know, pick your reason why a kid goes to school. For me, it's for them to learn. Oftentimes, and we hear about it on the news, that, you know, 13, 14-year-old does some type of crime. So we haven't talked about the impact on criminal justice, but that is a piece of this that in our, you know, just the safety of our society. So it's so important. And it really, to go to Lee Jordan's, what she was saying, it doesn't have to be that hard. If a kid is at school, they're learning and they're not doing all kinds of other things. So that's really why I'm passionate about attendance and truancy, and then I've just learned a whole bunch with it. So,
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair and members. And again, thank you for providing us the opportunity to have this conversation in committee. Representative Bakeberg and I have spent a lot of time together in the interim talking about this, meeting about this, deep diving from honest spaces from both of our lanes of professional work prior to being in the legislature. So thank you for allowing us the opportunity to talk about it. I have said from the very beginning in my time in the legislature is that it's important for us to find slivers of commonality. And what we have been able to do in the Education Policy Committee for the last 5 years has been having robust conversations about slivers of commonality when it comes to our kids. And I do want to use this as the example. Representative Bakeberg and I, he mentioned it, we don't align on a lot of things outside of this lane, but we've made a strong commitment to the kids and the future generations of Minnesota that this is important enough for us to put other things aside and work honestly and genuinely together for the betterment of our kids. And so welcoming others who want to join in that spirit of this work is really important. For me, why this is important, as you all see, it's not just about getting kids in school. That is critically important. I did my practicum at MSUM, Go Dragons, around what are the barriers to academic success outside of academic rigor. There's a whole lot of reasons why kids don't go to school that we're addressing here, but the main thing for me is family preservation. At the end of the day, if you're having concerns or you're having struggles in your life and your kid doesn't go to school, it ends up trickling down to an end effect that takes your kids away from you. And I really believe that we need to create a wraparound service support to love on our kids while they're in school and really lean into family preservation. And so from that lane, that's why I come to this work and making sure that we have strong, educated youth that look like all of us going out into the professional world, and that's critically important. And so we know and we recognize that this is a starting point for a very long marathon,
And as we all know in the marathon world, like, it takes training, it takes a team, and it takes all of us to come together to get across the finish line for the kids of Minnesota. So thank you all. For those of you interested in joining us, we would love to have more conversations. And a sincere thank you to Representative Bakeberg for joining me in this crazy idea to try to dissect attendance. But I think what we've done here is we've signaled to our stakeholders across the state that this is critically important for us. We've signaled to the kids that they matter to us, and we're signaling to our legislators that it's time for us to get to work. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you to our bill authors, our testifiers, and members for a great discussion. And now I'm going to move into some housekeeping things so we can get these bills moved. And so everybody understands the intention of this is we are going to lay these bills over, not to end them or anything, but actually the work will continue. And then Representatives Keeler and Bakeberg will bring back kind of a final bill, or maybe a couple if it ends up with talking with Lee Jordan, possibly the policy. If we could, we have policy we can send right to the floor, we could do that without having to send it to you know, another committee like Ed Finance. But the finance one's possibly a separate bill. We'll let you two determine that when that time comes. But just so everybody knows, that's the intention of this. They're going to work on it and bring it back before us. So I'm going to start with Representative Keeler's author's amendment. So, and actually, you don't even have to say anything, except the committee will in a second. Representative Keeler moves House File 62 before the committee. Representative Keeler moves the A1 author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. The chair lays over House File 62 as amended for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further consideration at a later date. Then we have Representative Keeler moves House File 1030 before the committee. The chair lays over House File 1030 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further consideration at a later date. Representative Keeler moves House File 1053 before the committee. The chair lays over House File 53 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further consideration at a later date. Representative Keeler moves House File 1054 before the committee. The chair lays over House File 1054 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further consideration at a later date. Representative Keeler moves House File 1413 before the committee. The chair lays over House File 1413 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further consideration at a later date. Representative Keeler, you get a lot done right there.
Yeah, so, yay.
Members, that includes today's agenda. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, February 26th. And with that, the committee stands adjourned.